Tonight on the Daily Debrief.
You were being told that they had probable cause to charge the defendant, Robert Kraft, with a crime, correct?
Yes, sir.
The officer who arrested the owner of the New England Patriots testifies about how a prostitution sting netted a high-profile arrest. And a description of the video the defense wants no one to see.
Were there sexual acts that you observed occur on video?
Yes.
Plus, Tiffany Moss now reportedly wants an appeal one day after receiving a death sentence over the death of her stepdaughter. Also, harsh questions for the Attorney General over the Mueller report into Russian election interference. And a defense witness may have just destroyed the entire prosecution theory over what happened to a family of four. This is the Daily Debrief. It's Wednesday, May 1st. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Debrief. Attorney Linda Kenny Bodden along with me. Good to see you again tonight.
Good to see you again.
Judge Ashley Wilcott will be with us in just a moment. A Florida judge is deciding whether authorities there broke the law when they installed cameras inside a massage parlor as part of a prostitution investigation, which netted the arrest of an NFL owner. Authorities say the recordings they obtained show New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft and others receiving illicit sexual massages. Kraft has pleaded not guilty to charges that he solicited prostitution, and his attorneys are arguing that the recordings were unconstitutionally gathered, even though police had a search warrant. Today in court, Kraft's defense attacked the police for not including information about legitimate massage customers when they sought a warrant.
You don't say to Judge Coates in the affidavit, there were 104 men, there were a few women, I didn't deem the women to be customers because I logged how quickly they exited, and I don't think they're customers. You don't say that, right?
Correct.
You just say 104 men, correct?
Correct.
And while you saw female reviews online when you Googled, like you testified on Friday, you don't include that in the warrant, right? You just include the male reviews, correct? It's a yes or no question.
I only included the reviews from Rub Maps and USA Sex Guide, yes.
You didn't include female reviews, correct?
I can't tell if those reviews that I read were in fact from females or not. They're on the internet.
Well, this is the internet that you relied upon to get a very invasive warrant. Did you not believe what you were reading?
I believe the information was true and accurate to what I observed, yes. But as for the women that you are saying that provided these reviews, I don't know for a fact whether or not they are men and women,
but
men
or
women.
You were certain enough of the information that you put it into an affidavit, swore to it, went in front of a judge, and got a warrant, correct?
On the Rub Maps, yes.
So is the Rub Maps more reliable in your estimation?
It's a pay site, and from my experience and training, yes, it is.
Defense fought with the lead investigator about whether other avenues for investigation were also possible. Listen to this, but keep in mind, would less invasive techniques actually have yielded good enough information for the authorities to file specific charges against specific clients?
The bottom line is, right, you could have applied, when you applied for the sneak and peek, for a regular warrant, right? It was an option, correct?
I could have applied for
a regular warrant.
A regular search warrant wouldn't have given me enough probable cause to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the proceeds from prostitution was occurring inside that business.
I know you keep saying that. I'm not asking that. I'm asking you, is there any law or anything in your general orders that prevented you from doing a search warrant before you did the sneak and peek warrant? Is there a law that prevented that?
No.
And there is no, for these questions, okay, I'm asking if there is a law you're aware of or anything in your general orders that would have prevented you from doing this, okay?
Okay.
Not asking you whether, in your opinion, it was the best possible approach. I'm asking you if you could have, okay?
Okay.
You could have done a search warrant and taken video surveillance that the spa itself has, right?
Correct.
You know that the spa had video, correct?
Correct.
You could have done that, correct?
I obtained that video, but yes.
You could have done it through a regular knock and announce search warrant, correct?
Correct.
You could have done a regular knock and announce search warrant and taken the proceeds from the cash register and the ledger and the other financial documents that were inside, correct?
Correct.
You could have waited for merchant services to get back, correct? Before applying for the sneak and peek warrant.
Correct.
You could have followed up with the banking records independently of the grand jury reasoning and obtained them yourself, correct?
Correct.
You could have gotten wage and hour reports, like we talked about they did in Martin County, to show whether the girls that worked at the massage, according to you, girls in air quotes, whether they were being paid regular wages or under the table, correct?
Correct.
You could have talked to the landlord about what was going on inside, right?
I attempted to.
Did you?
Later on, yes. He didn't get to me right away. He's very evasive.
The officer testified that none of this would have been as effective as what he actually did. Next, the officer who actually arrested Robert Kraft testified about how the case unfolded.
You have an opportunity on that day to stop an individual that you later identified as Robert Kraft.
Yes, sir, I did. All right.
So let's talk about that. Where were you situated? Mark unit?
Yes, sir.
And where were you in relation to the Orchids of Asia Spa?
I was in the next plaza over. The Orchids of Asia Spa is in the Jupiter Square Plaza, and I was in the next plaza over in the back, which is the Shops of Jupiter, which has like a Gold's Gym and a movie theater. And
so how did you know when it was that you were going to actually be the one to stop somebody coming out who they determined had probable cause that had engaged in a prostitution act?
As they would get back to their, as they were walking back to their vehicles, that's when the agents or the detectives who were visually watching them get into whatever car it was. They would then get behind that vehicle as they were leaving the parking lot and follow them. I remember parts of it. I know I remember hearing what the driver was wearing, what
right.
type of car.
When is the stop message delivered on the TAC channel at what point?
The stop message was delivered right after, well, actually probably before they left, that we have PC for this guy or this one's a stop. However, it was specifically worded. We knew which ones were stops, which ones were not.
And it was absolutely clear in your mind from the information that you were given that when they said either PC, tell the court within the record for what's PC?
Probable cause.
They either used the term PC or, yeah, make the stop. You were being told that they had probable cause to charge the defendant, Robert Kraft, with a crime, correct?
Yes, sir.
The arresting officer then described the rest of the stop along with a couple of interludes of strange humor.
And so when the plainclothes detectives tell you that he gets into what vehicle?
They didn't know at first. They thought it was a Hyundai Genesis. I think it was a kind of fancy four-door sedan, for lack of better words, and ended up being a white Bentley.
And then how did that come about, that they had stopped, that they determined it was a white Bentley?
The agents got behind the vehicle and realized it was a Bentley and not a Genesis. No disrespect to whoever owns a Bentley or a Genesis.
I'm
sure it's a significant difference in vehicle.
Thanks for one of the small laughs we've had this
morning. Yeah, I'll do my best to keep them going.
Thanks. So actually, it was tight enough of an operational plan that the intent was not to lose the person that they had established probable cause on, correct?
Yes, sir. I walked up to the vehicle, identified myself as a police officer, and just started to engage in conversation.
Do you recollect the conversation between you and the passenger?
Fairly well, probably not verbatim.
I mean, we all know standing here today that before you stopped the vehicle, you didn't know it was Robert Kraft, correct?
No, I did not. If I did, I may have gave it to the other guy, to be honest with you.
So did you have a conversation with the person in the passenger seat that turned out to be Robert Kraft?
Yes, sir, I did.
And could you tell the court what that conversation consisted of?
The way that it was going on the traffic stops is my job was to identify the people in the vehicle and just give that information back to the room. That was my goal. I'll say it's kind of like acting, but we're just trying to make sure that it wasn't, weren't giving off the kind of leading that we knew more than they knew that we knew type of deal. So I was just trying to alleviate any stress that they had and just make it very kind of calming. So it was just a kind of happy-go-lucky traffic stop.
Also today, a detective testified that it was obvious, at least to him, when a customer at the spa was seeking a legitimate massage and when a customer was after illegal sex acts.
Can you describe for the court what you initially saw on the video when that female walked into that room?
She came in and fairly quickly, I realized that this was probably going to be a legitimate massage based on her demeanor.
Let me interrupt you there. Was there any knowledge imparted to you or any description given to you as to some general characteristics to look for that would indicate to you that a person was there to engage in sexual acts that they would pay for?
The basics that I understood was that it was going to be clear. If we had something that was illegal, it was going to be obvious, and it was going to be something we would know fairly quickly.
Was that something that, were there something that you were looking for, some signs that were given off by the customers that came in?
Sure.
What was that?
Getting undressed completely naked, laying on the table without a towel or a sheet over the top of them, completely naked. Those were the two quickest signs.
And was it your experience also as you went along that even though somebody may have come in and taken off some of their clothes and left some of them on, that they may eventually engage in a sexual act for which they paid for?
Yes.
Another detective described precisely what she saw on the video feed coming from inside the spa and why some people were charged while others were not.
Were there sexual acts that you observed occur on video?
Yes.
And was there any mistake in your mind that you were seeing a sexual act occur?
No.
And during that time, did any of the sexual acts include the manipulation of any of the male customers' penises?
Yes.
And could you tell by looking at the video whether any of the male customers had ejaculated?
Yes.
Did the employees there, did anybody use a condom for any of the customers?
Not that I could see.
Did any of the employees use gloves?
No.
Did they ever change the sheets?
No. Okay.
And was that male who paid for them eventually charged?
Yes.
So do you know, did they all walk in together?
They did.
So were there four people total, one that got charged and three that didn't?
Right, but four came in together. One male came up, went up and paid, and then he left. And then those three, four, and five stayed and
okay.
got their massages. And then later on, the male that paid came back with another male and paid, and then those two males were charged.
So he paid for three males?
He paid for five, well, with himself.
Five in total?
Five in total.
He made two trips?
Correct.
Our panel tonight is attorney Linda Kenny Bodden and Judge Ashley Welcott. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Ashley, I'll start with you on this one. I referred to the officer as the arresting officer. He's really the stopping officer because Kraft wasn't directly arrested there. But what's going on with this procedure here? I mean, they're getting probable cause, they say, from the video inside the spa, and then they're letting people leave, and then they're pulling them over for traffic violations to get their identity, and then they're letting them go, and then they're... You know, then they're arresting them later or charging them later. Like, so what procedurally about this seems odd?
Okay, so Aaron, here's what seems odd. It's a ruse. And so what they're doing is saying, we know these people, we have them on video at this massage parlor. They've left, we have to identify them. How can we do that? Oh, wait, I know how we're gonna do that, a traffic stop. And even that officer testifying, he seemed a little jovial to me testifying, in my opinion. And even he admitted, hey, what we did is then stop him and just, you know, hey, it's kind of a handy dandy traffic stop, no big deal, so that they could get the identity of the defendant in this case. It bothers me. It doesn't feel to me justified.
Okay, so Linda, you have some serious issues
right.
with this. Are they selecting who they charge and not charging other people? Is this more selective than they want us to believe?
Well, I think they knew Robert Kraft or somebody was going in there before they even stopped this. So it's a 4.5-day undercover operation. The problem you have is they had to minimize because it's a video warrant, right? And they were taping women who were going in and getting massages, and it took them 6 or 8 minutes watching them naked to see whether or not these were real massages. And their criteria was what? Well, if somebody went in and they were naked or they gave a tip to somebody, then there was an illegal massage. It's ridiculous under the law. It should never have happened, no matter who it is, whether it's you, I, Ashley, or Robert Kraft.
Okay, well, the basic question the judge has to answer is, does an individual's right to privacy basically prevent a judge from issuing a warrant? The judge has to answer that. He's going to start reviewing the documents starting basically right now. And still ahead tonight here on The Debrief. She did nothing to defend herself when prosecutors tried her for killing her stepdaughter. Now, she reportedly wants an appeal. We take you back inside the courthouse for the case against Tiffany Moss. Plus, the state says a California man killed a family of four for money, but did he really gain from their deaths? An accountant puts the numbers to the test. We'll talk about that case too after the break. The Georgia woman who represented herself said nothing to defend herself and wound up with a death sentence, now reportedly wants her conviction appealed. Tiffany Moss learned yesterday that a jury recommended a death sentence. That same jury convicted her of starving her stepdaughter, Imani, to death after previous periods of abuse. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports that Moss is allowing the standby attorneys who were in court for her trial to file an appeal on her behalf. Under Georgia law, the state Supreme Court must review the record of any death sentence. The 22-year-old suspected of killing two and injuring four on a Charlotte, North Carolina college campus is scheduled to be in court tomorrow. Tristan Terrell is suspected of barging into a classroom and shooting without saying a word. One student died running toward him, police say, in a likely attempt to save others. Terrell is facing two counts of murder, four counts of attempted murder, and a series of weapons and assault charges. Attorney General William Barr was on Capitol Hill today to face questions surrounding his handling of the Mueller report. Rachel Stockman has this recap.
The Barr hearing was at times contentious as Senate Democrats peppered the Attorney General with questions about a report issued by Robert Mueller. Its purpose, to determine whether Russian agents interfered with the 2016 election.
A president essentially tries to change the lawyer's account in order to prevent further criticism of himself.
Well, that's not a crime.
Senator Dianne Feinstein pushed Barr on whether President Trump's instructions to former White House counsel Don McGahn to lie about Trump's attempts to get rid of Mueller constituted obstruction of justice.
So you can, in this situation, instruct someone to lie?
No, it has to be, well, to be obstruction of justice, the lie has to be tied to impairing the evidence in a particular proceeding.
Former federal prosecutor and law and crime trial analyst Gene Rossi says Barr acted like President Trump's defense counsel.
He is the people's lawyer. He is not the president's lawyer. I was a supporter of Bill Barr when he was nominated, but not anymore. I don't trust anything he says, frankly.
Republicans focused on the report's finding that there was not an underlying conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia. Their argument? Trump could not logically obstruct a probe into a conspiracy that never occurred.
Was there an underlying crime here?
No.
Also argued was a letter from Mueller to Barr, which criticized some of Barr's initial summary of Mueller's report. Mueller says Barr did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office work and conclusions.
I received a letter from Bob, the letter that's just been put into the record. And I called Bob and said, you know, what's the issue here? Are you, and I asked him if he was suggesting that the March 24th letter was inaccurate. And he said no, but that the press reporting had been inaccurate.
Barr is scheduled to testify again on Thursday. This is Rachel Stockman for the Law and Crime Network.
We are preparing to cover the trial of a man accused of killing the reported date of actor Ashton Kutcher. 22-year-old Ashley Ellerin was found stabbed to death in her Hollywood apartment in early 2001. Her childhood friend, journalist Carolyn Murnick, downplays the connection, however, between Kutcher and the victim and says they were just getting to know one another. Authorities charged alleged serial killer Michael Gargiulo as the murderer. Opening statements in this case are scheduled for tomorrow. And now to the McStay family murders in California. Defendant Charles Merritt is accused of killing business associate Joseph McStay and the entire McStay family. They all disappeared in 2010, and several years later, the graves of all four of the McStays turned up in the Mojave Desert. The defense is trying to convince the jury that another business associate, Dan Kavanaugh, is behind the murders. The defense presented evidence that Kavanaugh may have been lying about his whereabouts when the family disappeared. The state says Charles Merritt killed all four of those family members for money. Today, a forensic accountant testified that his stress test of the defendant's finances showed no windfall gains after the death of the McStays.
As far as Mr. Merritt is concerned, you did review his records as well, correct?
That's correct.
In terms of after the disappearance of Mr. McStay, did you have an opinion as to whether Mr. Merritt either gained or lost from that disappearance financially?
My opinion was that he completed the jobs that were underway.
Objection calls for speculation and misstates evidence.
Overruled it. He understood that it's his opinion.
Go ahead, sir.
So the jobs that we had visibility to were completed to the best of our knowledge. We found no evidence of any claims for unfinished work. Payments were made in full on those jobs. The gain would have come just through the normal completion of the jobs rather than anything extraordinary.
So, did you have an opinion as to whether he gained or did not gain from the disappearance of Mr. McStay financially?
So, as I stated before, we were looking for things that were outside the ordinary scope of business. We didn't find any gains outside the ordinary scope of business.
Remember back to the prosecution case in chief where they were showing these checks and these dollar amounts moving back and forth between the defendant and the victim and the victim's business. Well, this guy says, this is just business as usual. I looked at all of the accounts. Judge Ashley Wilcott, does this completely destroy the state's case in chief?
Well, I think they already had some things that were reasonable doubt, but this adds to it because it's, in essence, that's just eliminated the motive that was argued by the prosecution. And so I think, again, it adds to the reasonable doubt in this case that exists.
Linda Kenny Bodden, the question is, does it destroy the state's case in chief, or could the jury look and say, this is just a paid defense expert, we're not going to believe him?
No, I thought he was an excellent expert. And the other thing he testified to, not only that Charles Merritt didn't gain anything, but that Dan Kavanaugh, remember him? Some other dude did it who had the email on the computer of the decedent. The decedent said, you are somebody who could basically kill my family, that he gained a lot, including selling the business. So I think you put those together. I think this may be, along with the DNA of the undefined people on the rope, the final straw.
You know, this case is just one of those cases where the defense has something to say in response back with a witness to almost every single prosecution claim. And when cases are like that, they're tight. Great to have this panel, Judge Ashley Wilcott, attorney Linda Kenny Bodden, here on The Debrief tonight. And of course, thanks for those of you watching along with us. You can join us again tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock Eastern for our recap of the best moments in cases nationwide. Our live trial coverage begins tomorrow, though, on the network at 9 a.m. Eastern. Have a good night.